Okay, welcome one, welcome all to the very first episode of Flippers Always Win. I am your host, Flip. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this podcast. Many of you I personally know. If there's anybody out there listening who I don't know, that's a huge shock to me, but thank you for listening as well. I am a huge super fan of Survivor, and my story is not linear with it. And if you'll indulge for a second, I'd love to share how I got to this point of speaking into the abyss at 11:51 on a Sunday night when I was a small little kid. I watched Survivor with my dad. I remember the finale of season one. I remember Jervis's confessional for some reason. We watched all of season two, and I remember my dad saying before the finale of that one, "I want Tina to win because she has arthritis." So that's what I remember about that. I remember watching season three, which right now I'm actually rewatching. I remember a little bit of season four, most of season five, and then it just stopped. We sort of just fell out of it, and I didn't really think anything of it. I never really thought to watch Survivor at all up until the world ended in 2020. You may remember this as well if you were there. All the live sports stopped, all the live TV stopped, all the live programming and new content stopped in March of 2020, except, even though it wasn't technically live, season 40, Winners of War of Survivor, which, of course, if you are not really a Survivor fan, if you are not somebody who's been following the show for years and years and years, probably the worst show season to watch, the worst season to watch in terms of getting the entire series spoiled for you. But it was the only thing on. And not only was COVID happening, I was stuck in an apartment. I was in a new relationship that I had just realized probably wasn't the right one right before, like days before everything shut down. And so not only was Survivor 40 a really cool season and a nice way to get back to something that I enjoyed as a child, it truly was an escape for me. It was an escape from a very toxic relationship, a very scary time in life. And it gave me a little bit of hope. And then, of course, you know, the season ended. And at that time, I was living in Chicago. That was March 2020. You know, the season ends around May 2020, whatever it is. I moved back to my home state of Maryland later. And I did that to be around family. I did that to be around friends. I did that to, you know, set up the rest of my life around the people who mean the most. And I'm so happy that I did. But those first few months when I was back in Maryland after being, I had not lived there for 4 years, it was really, really a lonely time. A lot of lonely nights, a lot of dark nights, making a lot of bad decisions. And the thing that really got me through it was pretty much as soon as I moved into my new place in Maryland, I started watching Survivor backwards. I watched season 38, season 36. I just kept going back, like the opposite way, watching the entire series in reverse, knowing already for many of the seasons, like who the winner was, because I had seen Winners at War, but it didn't matter at all. That wasn't the point. In fact, it was like reverse engineering, watching a win. You can learn the game a lot more efficiently, in my opinion. You're studying the right people. Let's put it that way. And eventually things got better in my life. I started becoming more accustomed to my new normal. But Survivor didn't go away. In fact, I brought Survivor to as many people as I possibly could. I brought it into my girlfriend's life. I've brought it into new friends' lives. I've actually amassed a group of Survivor fans bordering on super fans over the past, I would say, 2 years that I'm very proud of. And that's a big reason why this podcast is happening right now, because these are people who are of all different levels of Survivor fandom, but everybody has their own distinct perspective on Survivor and nobody's wrong. And that's what's so great about the game, is that everybody can watch the episode and you can have endless conversations about the exact same thing that you saw. You're talking about people's motives. You're talking about people's emotions. You're talking about people's strategy. It's a unique and completely original perspective of people that you don't get anywhere else, not even in another reality show, because no other reality show pushes you to your absolute base, the core of who you are, like Survivor does, and none ever will, really. I guess what I want to say about Survivor is that it gives me hope. There are so many times that I think about what I want in my life and I'm confused, but I always can picture me being at final tribal council and winning the final vote and jumping into the air and yelling and screaming and crying and acting like a fool. And then a year later, being surrounded by loved ones and friends and random people who might be supporting a journey of a person they don't even know and celebrating a fantastical win. And you go back and forth thinking, is that silly? Is that a waste of energy? But at some point you can't escape the fact that your mind and your heart wants what it wants. And I want to be on Survivor. And other people I know want to be on Survivor. And in a way, Survivor has not just saved who I am, but sculpted who I am as a young adult, slowly but surely becoming not so young of an adult. And I want to pay it back. And that's why we're starting this podcast. This game has offered so much to me in the way of conversation, finding out that people in my life who I was close to, who I wasn't as close to, that's connected me to people again. It's connected me to people again in a way that I hadn't ever expected. There's a lot of people who really love this game, and everything in the world is so divisive right now. And Survivor is a place not just to escape to, but to thrive in. And maybe we're all just looking for a little place to thrive in. We're all looking for our own little tribe, little Fiji, little island. And I feel as though I can thrive in the game of Survivor by talking about it thousands and thousands and thousands of miles away with a ton of people in my life. And that's a great feeling to have. I'm a little surprised at my own diatribe here, because I consider myself, when I watch Survivor, when I talk about Survivor generally, a strategist, really, truly an analyst, thinking of all different types of webs of social situations. And that's the way that my mind attaches itself to Survivor. That's what I'm drawn to, the social dynamics, the social strategy. So as I talk out loud to myself about Survivor for the first time, I realize that even though I'm drawn to the strategy and the dynamics of the game, what truly is in my heart is the fact that it provides a connection to people. Both the game itself is a connection from person to person, and the game as a fan is a connection from person to person in a way that's healthy, I think. There isn't this divisiveness that comes with it like you would get in sports or politics or something, where you've got people on both sides and there's an interesting topic at hand with sports and politics or something else, but it's clouded because people are just so stuck in their own convictions and stuck in their own anger and stuck in their own fear. And in Survivor, of course, we're all rooting for different people and have our opinions, but you don't get as much of that. It's more of a free game. You're free to be who you want to be without fear, anger, loyalty. You can just watch people and you're not inundated with clouds of negativity. Even when negative things happen, there's always a positive spin coming later, because Survivor really is a game about hope. It's given me hope. It gives other people hope. I want this podcast to be a space for people to feel like they can come on and you don't have to be an expert. You just have to be passionate. You just have to want to talk about something you enjoy with people that you enjoy. That's all this is. It's for the fans. It's by the fans. So thank you for the indulgence. We've got a great show coming up, and we'll be right back after this following message. Hi, I'm Flip, the host of Flippers Always Win. We don't have any paid sponsorships, so in lieu of an ad, I'll be talking about a mushroom candle that sits at the desk that I work at, that I've sort of looked at every day for the past year and a half, but have never actually looked at. I'm opening it up right now, and it seems like the candle is about half of what it started as. The wick is sort of crispy. It's hanging in there. It's a little flimsy. There's a mushroom candle here, and I never notice it. the first inaugural guests on the inaugural episode of Flippers Always Win, my good friends, Emily and Jesse. I'm super excited to have you guys here. And before we jump in on the analysis from the first episode, I just want to give you both a chance actually to talk about your Survivor journey. You guys are relatively new fans, but you've seen a couple seasons in the 30s. You've seen, I believe, two or three seasons in the new era. So just talk for a second, each of you individually, about your Survivor journey as fans, how you got to this point where you're talking with me on a Thursday night about Survivor.
So Flip, obviously you got me into Survivor off the bat. I never watched it growing up. I was like, what is this reality TV show on an island? But watching it, I was instantly hooked because it does have like this draw to it with all these different players from different backgrounds. The earlier seasons are really tough for me to watch just because there's a lot of different issues going on, but yeah. You gave me the highlights of where to start.
So I guess what attracted me to the show was obviously like the social aspects. It's really interesting to see how like bonds are formed and broken at the slightest thing. So I feel like little stuff that happens throughout the game, it's ever so dynamic that you really can't just like be set in a plan or be set in alliance and then not be able to quickly pivot. You know, Andy kind of showcased that too. It's like kind of turned a negative into a positive.
Dynamic is the perfect word. I think the older seasons, while they're entertaining, not always as dynamic. Sometimes they were, but a lot of static. Yeah. And that is one good thing I think about the new era. There are some things maybe too, like not to like, but the more dynamic, the better, as long as it's done in a not completely manufactured way. Buried the lead. Also, you guys are a couple. You are a boyfriend and girlfriend. So yes. The reason I even mentioned that is because, you know, as you know, as relatively new Survivor fans, you're getting to go through the Survivor fandom journey together largely for the first time. So it's kind of a dual thing for both of you. So you already talked about what attracts you to the show. So let's just jump right into the overall new era. I believe you've watched, 41? You've watched 45, 46. So this is your fourth?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
So first question about the new era before we jump into the entire just new episode from last night. If you had to pick a couple, who are your favorite castaways from the new era?
I really like Dee. And I say that because I feel like she plays more with her heart. And she plays a really good social game. And there wasn't a lot of like backstabbing. I feel like I really liked her relationship with Julie. I feel like that was genuine. And also being a Latina, I feel like I can resonate with her too. So she's one of my favorites. I like Julie too. I mean, Dee and Julie were just like the ultimate duo, like
they were,
mother-daughter vibes, which I really liked. But it seemed genuine the whole time.
They never like really played each other.
No. Julie went off the rails a little, or started to go off the rails, and then Dee kind of reined her in a little bit, but that was the only like shift.
And that was the one time that Dee actually made herself vulnerable. I think that was when Julie got voted out, was the one time that Dee maybe didn't play her cards right, and like it could have been her potentially, but yeah, they didn't go after each other. It was genuine. And so, Jesse, what about you?
I think one of my favorites was Hunter from last season. I think I liked Hunter. He was the one who was always like building stuff for them.
And, oh, was
like,
he really good
really
at
really good at the game?
And he like and created Survivor.
Yeah. So I think I liked his preparedness of the game. It really made it really interesting because people were trying to vote him off basically because of like how good he was. Like he was really good, you know, obviously in the three tribes phase and the initial phase, because like, okay, everybody wants him because they need to keep him in the game. But then as soon as like the merge happened, he was like one of the top people, like, hey, he has to go because he's just too strong for this game.
But he was too strong at the competitions and like lacked the social game. I think I remember him like socially kind of also going off the rails.
Right. Briefly. His social game was his usefulness.
He like had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
Socially.
So I thought it was very interesting because we hadn't really seen a person that was like that dominant. I think one of the people that we remember was from David and Goliath, like kind of, you know, Nick, you know, I guess I don't want to spoil any of the past ones.
Oh, but I think people know.
It's just hard to know who's going to listen. Yeah.
I feel like we're more like new era participants in this too. So we're like the newbies of the show.
Let's say you're out on the island and you're playing and somebody like Hunter's out there. Like, obviously, once the merge hits, he became everybody's target pretty quickly. Do you feel like that's what you would do? Do you feel like that's what you would want to do is get the big target out, or like, because I sort of felt like he went pretty early, and I sort of felt like they could have, a lot of people could have used him as a shield for longer, honestly. I thought they were a little bit too ready to get him out when he could have been used, because he really, nobody wins out. It's maybe happened a couple times ever.
It's since all the challenges become individual, you have less like a motivation to keep him in the game, right? So I don't know if I'll necessarily do it. I would not be winning that many challenges, you know, because like,
I don't know about that. You're pretty good at everything.
You're kind of hard, Jesse. I'd vote you out for it. Sure.
Right. You know,
I don't
like
the people that are good at competitions, because then you get to the end and then you win five in a row.
I know.
But it's then, like, oh, great. Now you're here.
I don't think I guess for us, like, I haven't seen anybody win completely, purely win based on of like the strength of their challenge. Just like,
yeah,
it rarely happens, you know.
Flip so, is like, our encyclopedia and can probably fact check that.
Yeah, no, I got that's all I got going for me is knowing data and information. I mean, it's not an exaggeration though. Jesse is good at everything. You play Catan better than anybody in the world. You beat us at Skyo, which is I don't know. You know, like everything about every. There's no, I don't
just
know.
Games is the problem.
Yeah. Or
Survivor. Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd have to throw some competitions.
If I was out there with somebody like Hunter, and if you want to compare Jesse in terms of being good at a lot of stuff, I would want to attach myself to them because I know there's going to be a chance personally, and I feel like a lot of people just get they're just too eager to get somebody out. But you never know. People get threatened out there, and it's a crazy game. So let's jump into the premiere from last night. A lot going on. You guys just got done watching it. So did you notice anything from last night, you know, that seems like a little bit of a shift of energy change from specifically 45 and 46 the last couple seasons? Was there anything that was a little bit different?
I felt very intense gameplay right off the bat. I mean, I feel like normally it's more like kumbaya, like we're all a community and we're all friends, but instantly everyone was like, all right, go, go, go. We have to find an idol. We have to get out there. So
yeah,
that was surprising to me. I mean, it makes good TV. That it was a great first episode, but what do you think, Jesse?
I think now that like, I think from seeing like 45 and 46, there's no need to like sugarcoat. Okay. You know, we're going to, you know, search for this on a boat and like find stuff. It's like, no. We're going to get on the island and actually like do these challenges as if you were playing in like day 13, you know. It just seems like, all right, there's no holding hands here anymore.
Yeah.
I think that's a good way to put it, like, because in the early part of the new era, there still was some trepidation, even with all the new challenges they're throwing everybody's way. Like, do we look, do we not look, like, how do I, now it just seems like you've got at least one person from every tribe who's either going for it, or if they stumble into it, like Gabe, for example, last night, it's like no question about it, even though he wasn't even necessarily looking for it. I'm just going for it. And then you end up with a box rolling down a hill.
It's like less friendly than it's ever been, I think. Mm. Like initially, or maybe it was just the edit that I saw, but initially it felt like we were just here for the game only.
The point that you said that I wanted to touch on was you felt like in the past, oh, there's like this sense of community, which is funny. It's ironic because I don't know how many times the word community was brought up by Jeff last night. He's pushing this community thing. He's still pushing this community thing, which in the new era, he's become like very kumbaya for, you know, there's lots of reasons why that might be happening. And it seems like even though he's pushing it, and that's like this whole idea that the game is based off community, which is true, people truly are out for blood right away. Yeah. So, you know, it sort of does contrast with, at times, what he's trying to say, actually.
Right. Yeah. And I wish that there was more community that was like that resonated more, you know?
Yeah.
Because then it just feels like, oh, we're just here for the money. Oh, we're just here to stab everyone. You know, it's like,
it's like more intense. It's like, all
right,
we're not.
But not everybody's going to win. There's only going to be one winner, you know?
Right, yeah.
So I think whoever wins will need to bring that sense of community back with everyone.
Do you think that it's better? Because like that's a good, like Kenzie was somebody who brought community together last season.
Yeah.
D in her own community, I would say, like in her own tribe, not for everybody else, whereas Kenzie was for everybody. Do you think the season starts off on a better foot and is more interesting when it starts off with community? Or do you think it's more interesting right off the bat when we saw what happened last night, which is like war?
Oh, definitely. Oh, war for sure. Yeah, I loved it. I love the war. I love the chaos. It's great. I hope it comes back to community, but maybe this is a different season where it's just chaos the whole time, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if I can. It's like hard to like, all right, now we're going to go.
Preparing for battle and now we're.
Because like, yeah. from here on out, you're just doing challenges to like either get advantages or, you know, there's not going to be a break after this, I feel, for them to like say, okay, you know, I guess unless you win a challenge, that's the only way you're going to build community within your tribe. But
I think the only, from what I can tell right now, honestly, the only tribe that has a chance at actually like really building community, like truly right now, is the blue tribe, which.
Oh, Tuku. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the red one has Rome and that's just like, everybody's like Rome. Yellow. We saw what happened. There's still a ticking time bomb there. So blue is really the only chance that has, I think, community, at least for the next, you know, couple episodes in the beginning of the season here. Now, obviously we just talked about how war is great for an opening episode. Community is great for maybe later on in the season as bonds grow. In general, what's the most important thing as, again, sort of relatively new fans for you to see in a premiere episode? And do you feel like those expectations were met this time around?
I personally love the relationship building. I find it so interesting because not everybody is socially aware. So when you put strangers together, I like to see how people are uncomfortable with each other and how they react. Mm-hmm. And either it goes off the rails like Andy and he just like loses his mind or like Gabe and Sue, like an unlikely duo, come together. So I find that really interesting. And I think it did meet my expectations. I feel like they showed a good amount of like odd couples coming together, and they also showed the outcasts.
I guess for me is like, I want to make sure that I see everyone get some screen time. I feel like it helps, one, not spoil a lot of stuff, because you can kind of tell with editing, you know, who's going to go further and not. And I think Andy was a good example of that. Like, he had a lot of screen time. And at first I was like, you know, I think they're going to keep him on for longer. But then, you know, they took me through the roller coaster. Oh, no, he's about to get voted out. And then next thing you know, he's staying. So it's just like, all right, you know, his screen time kind of showed that he's going to stay and make a little bit more lasting impact. You know, who knows if it's going to be for the next episode, but that we didn't really get to see a lot. So
in older seasons, even when there was somebody who was like having a meltdown, I feel like we still had time to learn about a lot of people. Billy. Yeah. That was the second episode, but Billy from Cook Islands, I think, is a pretty prominent example of like, yeah, he was having a meltdown, but I feel like we learned about a lot of people. We still learned about a lot of people last night, but there's also a couple of people that I already know they have no chance at winning, because we didn't learn a thing about Genevieve. We didn't learn a thing about Saul, even though like I like Saul a lot. He was one of my favorites, but I know he's not going that far probably, because I don't know a thing about Saul.
And that was at Kyle too.
Kyle. Yeah.
He got an intro. He got one of the first people on in the very beginning, like talking about, and I was wondering, like, we didn't really see much of him afterwards. And it's like, so is it because he doesn't go that far? Did he get that intro because of all the people out there? He has one of the more unique stories being in all the foster homes, but does he actually not that much of an impact of a player? The whole Sue thing is interesting to me. Immediately just everybody latching on to Sue, I guess just being the motherly figure, but I feel like she didn't even really have to do anything and they just were latching on to her.
Which could pose a problem because,
you know, if anything goes wrong, like, she's going to be blamed for it as far she's a leader, like de facto leader.
She needs to be more definitive on who she wants to choose versus like, everyone's choosing me. This is so great kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm sure she wanted everybody to like come to her, but I don't think she expected it. And I think it probably happened way quicker than what she would have even anticipated. It seems like she could be a really good player, but she's getting thrown off like, you know, right away by like how much she has to handle, kind of like a mom juggling five kids. My favorite line of the episode, and I don't want to botch it, is when she's tending to the fire and they agree that she's going to say a certain line.
Yeah.
Somebody comes back immediately. Somebody comes back and she's like, oh, the fire's gone. Good. Like, just like absolute mess. Like,
Sue's a team player.
Yeah. Like, that's not the signal for
it that. Worked though. I mean, not work. Yeah, he heard her and scurried away.
We still dropped the box, but
yeah, he still dropped the box, but he made it.
Really, the edit also really had me going that TK truly didn't believe that Gabe had found
Oh no.
Before they revealed it, I was like, oh my God, like, is he really about to get away with murder?
Yeah.
TK, let's talk about TK real quick. In the intro, he comes out and says, I'm looking at everybody here and I don't see anybody who can beat me. And then they lose the first challenge and he's like, don't get used to it. And then he goes and wins the supplies for his tribe. And he comes back and says, now they have no ability to vote me out whatsoever. There's no way in hell they could possibly get rid of me. And I'm like, have you seen Survivor? Have you seen Survivor? Like, how can you see? I don't know. Maybe he's not a super fan. Just to have that like black and white mentality of like, oh, there's no way, there's no way, there's no way. I'm not sure how, if he is a fan of this game, how you come into that thinking that way. But what was the vibe that you got from TK? How far do you think he's getting in this game?
I mean, TK has like Delulu confidence, which does get you pretty far in life, but I don't think it gets you all the way to the end. I mean, people can see through that pretty quickly and get annoyed by it very fast. But it depends on the relationship he builds, you know? I don't know who he's going to flock to. I feel like it's too early for that. Off the bat, I don't know why, just like mildly annoyed by him, but.
Yeah, he was kind of like, you're like, I don't know if I'm like,
I'm not sure yet. Yeah.
But I always thought it was really, you know, interesting on the second challenge where, you know, him and Aisha, and like she tried to, you know, take it a little bit. And then he was like, no. And then like after that, the whole editing was like him, you know, going alone and being off. But like he didn't say bye. He didn't like hug her.
Yeah,
anything.
He was a little rude.
It was like a little rude.
And then he told his crew, oh, she tried to wrestle me away. You know, yeah. It was a little like, well, you didn't really need to include that detail. I don't know.
Yeah,
it
was so that was a little weird.
Douchey, like, but.
You know, they usually like, you know. For playing the game down the line,
you still want to build a relationship
with them,
right. Yeah.
Because you don't know when you're going to cross lines with another tribe again. So I thought that was really interesting that he just like said, "Forget it, whatever." And then she had to like look from the beach as he was like going away. That was a pretty interesting.
It was awkward.
Part. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, he's obviously like, you know, considering himself the alpha of the situation. And I actually, if I have one prediction for the future for this episode. You know, TK, Gabe, and Kyle, they like hit it off, the guys bonding in that tribe. And then the whole, you know, Beware Advantage situation happens between Gabe and TK. My read on that situation is now TK knows about it. Gabe knows that TK knows about it. The first time that they go to tribal, Gabe is going to find a way to get TK out because he probably fears that TK having this information will hurt his game later, that he'll try to get him before he can go the other way. So I think TK might be the first person out, actually. Of his own tribe, which is funny because they did the whole guys bonding thing and immediately it just gets ruined. And that there's the opening for the girls. There's the opening for Sue, Caroline, and Sierra because it looked like, oh, maybe they might have an issue before that. But now it's like immediately a mess.
Not the bromance, though.
Bromance plus Gabe. And I think that's like a strong four.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
No,
yeah.
Not the bromance. The women plus Gabe.
Women plus Gabe.
Yeah. That's the strong four.
I think TK's got to hope that they win out, basically. That was from the blue tribe. So you can pick between yellow and red tribe, one player who left the strongest impression for you. Not Andy, not John, and not Rome either. We're ruling out Andy, John, and Rome because we know about them. Somebody who wasn't doing something crazy.
I really like Rachel. She just has like this outgoing personality, and I feel like she immediately knew, like, Andy, you're a little bit off the rails. I need to stay away from you. I was worried that Andy was going to like really throw her under the bus because she didn't, you know, console him late at night, which was super suspect of a move.
Yeah. That was a crazy move for like for a first night, like wake somebody up.
Fortunately, he turned it on the whole crew and not just her, but I don't know. They didn't show a lot of Rachel, but I feel like she could make it pretty far.
She's able to like be in the moment, but also analyze it at the same time. So like, she's like, okay, of course, Andy, I'm going to go with you and console you or whatever. But it was like a fine line between, you know, playing her game, but also helping out another person.
And she obviously has the ability to, you know, compartmentalize and be empathetic without giving too much away. Although it was interesting that Andy picked up on the fact that she wasn't giving him too much. So she was put in a really tough spot. I think she probably did the best she could, but remains to be seen whether she was just not giving Andy enough energy or maybe she isn't as good as faking it as it appeared in that one moment. We're going to find out with her. I think it's more likely that she is, but Andy, for as crazy as he is, not to make this about Andy because they made the whole episode about Andy, he's too perceptive for his own good. he's not great socially, but he is perceptive and he's overthinking, and that's pretty obvious. But all right, Jesse, from, if you can pick somebody who's not Rome, from the Red Tribe.
Well, we have a lawyer.
Here we go. Jesse loves a lawyer.
We love a lawyer. So I think Genevieve is going to make it far, but I think people are going to realize how strong socially she can be. And obviously she's taking her time, but I think the whole lawyer aspect from what we've seen in the past, they make it pretty far. So I think that's going to be, I don't think she's going to win, but I think she'll do pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to get a huge read on somebody who did. She had one confessional, I assume, if any.
Yeah, that was it. And so it's hard to say, but I was like, okay. Keyshawn, the ER doctor, he's like a very happy-go-lucky guy. So he's going to miss some social cues in terms of like people like backstabbing him and stuff like that. So I think he's going to be out.
People love an ER doctor, though.
They
people
do.
People respect and love a doctor. So, I mean, just with that alone, I feel like he could ride that pretty far.
It's going to be one person, though, that like...
If he can fly under the radar, I think he can make it.
Well, but he's too charismatic to fly under the radar. Right. He's going to be helping people like with little cuts and aids here and there, you know, aches and pains.
What to eat, what not to eat.
Checking temperatures and like hydration. It's going to be a lot for him because he looks like a person that he would like really help a lot of people.
Whenever, if he gets voted out of this game, I think it's going to be a pretty heavy blindside because he's a doctor and doctors, they don't really think twice about things. For better or for worse. I live with a nurse, so I hear a lot about doctors. Some of it's good and a lot of it's not. I have a couple family members who are doctors, and a lot of it's great if you're listening. Family members, it's so good. It's so good. Tiny little bit that's not. So I agree with your analysis that, you know, I think he'll make it pretty far, but eventually people will be like, now we got to get rid of this guy, which leads us into the final portion of what I'm going to talk about tonight. You can't have a talk with Flip about Survivor without talking about a winner pick, but we're not just doing a winner pick. We're doing a who can't win pick.
I am going to say Rachel, but I could be grossly incorrect.
Just you feel like that ability to like do both at the same time is genuine and it's going to translate well.
Yes. Although we really haven't seen enough of everybody. So just based on her first edit, I do feel like she'll win.
Okay. It's your can't win pick.
It's definitely Andy. I know we don't want to make the episode about Andy, but there's no way that Andy, I would be shocked if Andy made it to final three. That'd be insane.
Yeah.
Mark my words. If Andy makes it to final three on this podcast, I will rip a shot of Malort or something. I don't know.
He reminds me.
Crazy bet.
He reminds us of Emily, though. Like
I know Emily.
I was saying the yellow, the Lulu,
voted off first for sure, and then she survived somehow.
Well, the only reason she survived is because the girl quit because she wanted her cigarettes. But
but then after that, you know, we're like, oh, this might be her episode. Nope, this might be.
I was waiting patiently.
I mean, she ended up turning it around pretty, like not just as a player, but like she like had like a human evolution out there. Like it was crazy to see. But like I was saying that too, watching, I was like, if Andy survives, he's making it far. And I don't necessarily see him having the type of bonds that Emily ended up growing, but I could see him getting dragged to a final three as a complete, you know, zero.
Just some
sort of like an Angelina kind of vibe, like just dragged to the end because
or Ben, Ben, he didn't get any
or
votes.
Ben,
you know, Ben's an interesting one because I feel like he had his issues. He definitely had his anxiety meltdown similar to Andy. I think he was better socially, but he also, I'm not saying Ben gets any votes in a different final three, but he also was going up against two of the biggest badasses of the new era in the final three. So for that reason alone, he had no shot. But point taken that, I can't see Andy. He's made himself again such a non-threat immediately. Like his immediate impression is like this person cannot win, right? That like people are going to overlook him and always, I think, be like, we can just get somebody else out and get him. Like the people who actually end up in that position, they don't try for it because if they tried for it, it would be sussed out. You just have to be that bad. And he is.
Yeah.
I think he could get far, but he definitely won't win. And if he does get far, I am going to make you take a shot of Malort on this podcast.
I will do it. I will be back.
All right, Jesse, who's your win and then your can't win?
Can't win is Rome. Mm-hmm. My God. I think him not doing anything socially with his tribe said a lot. And like, how can they take him anywhere? He's just so out of the loop in terms of like socially that like he won't even like know what the true alliances are, if he's on the right side, if he's not. So it's going to be a long game for him.
To add on to that real quick, like you could say, oh, he did it to himself. Like if he had just been there, maybe he would have been in the loop socially. But honestly, for a person to think that strategy is good, you have to already be pretty weird socially.
Yeah.
No offense, Rome, if you're listening right now, which I'm sure you are. I think he has less of a chance of winning than Andy. And I think it would be really funny and ironic if he does get this idol and the first time they're at tribal, they trick him into not using it and he just gets voted out after all that.
Right. Yeah. If he doesn't, you know, pick it up socially, he's not going to do very well. My number one is Gabe.
Mm. Baltimore, shout out.
Baltimore.
I think he was really good at connecting with people initially and setting his like kind of crew up, and he kind of did it in a very genuine way. He got an idol. He obviously stumbled upon with TK, but I think that socially he can become bulletproof by the way he like connects with people. Yeah. Even though TK, he could still bring TK in his fold if he really wants to and form an alliance that way. And he seems like he's pretty good at the challenges too, so I think he'll do pretty well this season.
Yeah, he's like a good candidate for somebody to have as messy of an idol situation. First of all, he's gonna probably find this like final five idol, right? Like he's falls to the wall to do it. He's gonna find it, and yeah, like he's good enough socially to overcome this weird situation. Like I said, I think maybe TK is gonna make himself the target there, so that helps him out a little bit. Seems like he has the good connection with Sue. It's always good when the first person on the mat talk to in the opening scene, that's always a strong indication that person's going to go far. So yeah. The free account that I have on Zoom is running out of time. I want to thank both of you, Emily and Jesse, for being the inaugural guests on Flippers Always Win. Great talking to you guys. I'll talk to you guys later.
Bye, Flip. Right.
Take care.
See ya.
Hi, this is Flip, the host of Flippers Always Win. As mentioned earlier in the episode, we have no sponsorships. So in lieu of ad space, I'd like to talk about all the flies that were in my apartment over the past 2 months, I'd say. My partner, who you're about to meet, loves plants. And with plants, sometimes come flies. And to her credit, she found out that if you have a fly problem that goes along with plants, you can cinnamon the hell out of them. That's right, cinnamon. The thing that you put on apples or that you don't use it all, can really, really help kill insects. Cinnamon. It kills insects. All right, heading into our final segment of episode one, I have with me Julia Weaver. I live with Julia. She is my domestic partner, not like legally or anything. We're just boyfriend and girlfriend. I think that's we can say that's
a common term.
Yeah, that's the common term. So Julia is going to be having a regular segment on this podcast. And what it's going to entail is a deep dive of the social media profiles of one selected survivor castaway per week. Because it is your first appearance on the podcast, I would love for you to just talk a little bit about your personal survivor journey, how you got here to, you know, being a pretty big fan of the show and how it all went down for you.
Yeah, so I'm a pretty recent addition to the Survivor fandom, and you're to blame for that.
Mm.
Pretty much from our first date, I think one of the first things you brought up was Jeff Probst.
I did do that, yes.
But it was a couple months into our relationship before you actually had me watch any Survivor.
That's true. And we started with David versus Goliath.
Yes, great season.
And it is a great season, and I don't regret it. But as you may remember, the first episode doesn't end in a tribal council.
Yeah.
And that was the first episode you'd ever watched, correct?
Yeah, and so I thought it was a little slow.
Right.
I was like, where's the action here?
And I was like, just don't worry. This guy, Pat, he's going to break his back. But after that, it's really gonna get good. He's going to break his whole back. Oh, and after that, the show's going to be real fun. And you were rooting for Nick from the beginning.
From the beginning. Yeah. And he would have been voted out if it weren't for Pat breaking his back. Took one for the team.
And I will say the last thing before we get into the social media profile. I ask you every episode, who do you think is going to get voted out based off of, like, you know, what we've seen? I've seen a lot of the episodes beforehand for seasons we've watched, of course. Mm-hmm. So I already know going into it. I'd say you have a pretty solid record overall of predicting who's getting voted out, but you don't have the best record, I would say. I don't know who does, but you don't have the best record when it comes down to a final two or a final three.
No, I always pick the other person.
What was the biggest injustice in a final two you've seen?
My girl, Aubrey.
Aubrey?
That broke my heart.
Yeah, no, you're a big Aubrey stan. And you also wanted Ozzy. I thought you were going to say Ozzy.
That's a tough one.
I mean, Yule's a better player than Michelle, right?
So. Yeah. So I can respect. You see, the thing is, I don't disagree with Michelle or Yule winning. I think they're both good players. When it comes to Ozzy, I think he was like the ultimate. I thought there was no way he wouldn't win. And then Aubrey, I really just liked her more. I don't know.
Yeah, it always comes down to social and you forget about it by the time you get to the final two. It's like, how could Tarzan not win? How could,
he was a provider. He was a physical threat. He was so good in comps. But as you always say, this is a social game. Came down to Yule's social skills.
And it's just that Ozzy, again, like he just didn't have the social, I would say, influence gravitas that Yule had. I mean, Yule's whole game was predicated on being called the Godfather. and Ozzy was a fantastic player. But, you know, in episode two, he's trying to get his own guy out. They throw a challenge. And I think that he just didn't have the feel for people that Yule did. And then in terms of Aubrey, this is a Michelle stan household, by the way. No shade to Michelle. I'm a huge Michelle fan. I think she's one of the most underrated players ever. I've seen Winners at War. You haven't seen Winners at War. So that factors into it, too. Aubrey's great, but Michelle, great social player. She really only had her social game, and it got her the win. Now, was the jury a little bit biased? Yeah, for sure. You know, Aubrey was a great strategist, but again, just didn't quite have the charm. And sometimes it comes down to the subjective, right? Kenzie versus Charlie.
Well, and you know I love Kenzie.
We love Kenzie.
That is one that I did agree with.
Yeah, you did. Even though
Charlie was an excellent player.
Well, you know what? There's been a lot of those in Survivor history. We'll see what happens with this upcoming season. But let's dive into this social profile now. Who have you selected and why did you select them?
Well, for this episode, I picked Teeny. And the reason I picked Teeny, honestly, it was because right off the bat, I didn't love them. They seem like a chameleon, which is going to serve them very well, but rubs me as a person a little bit the wrong way.
Because they're a chameleon or because of something else? Like, that's interesting that them being a chameleon rubs you.
I don't trust it.
You don't trust it?
I don't trust
it. See, I also didn't love Teeny, but I was just like annoyed by their immediate exuberance, which so many people nowadays in the new era do. Certainly, Teeny's not the only one from last night's episode that annoyed me. But for you, it was more about, like, you could see through what they're doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if you watch their intro clips, they admit that they are very able to kind of blend to the people that they're around. And, you know, they talk about how it's a strength in their Survivor game. And so I guess we'll see how it plays out. But yeah, I see right through that.
If they can make it work for them, certainly it will be a strength because a lot of people don't go in saying that. A lot of people like TK, for example, go in saying, I don't see anybody here who could beat me.
Yeah.
Certainly not thinking about anybody but themselves in that scenario. So Teeny's on the opposite end of that spectrum and we'll see where it lands. But you did some stalking. Julia is in general an info warrior and stalker of both information and at times people on the internet, certainly not in real life. So you've done some stalking, you've done some deep diving. What have we gleaned insights from Teeny's social media?
Yes, yes, I am very much on the internet. So Teeny's social media presence, specifically Instagram, is kind of fun. And it's very Gen Z. Like very much these photo dumps that don't really have a ton to do with each other. All of the captions seem like they would be like an inside joke. Like, we're not supposed to know what the caption refers to.
And as an internet person yourself, how, I mean, when I look at captions, I think that's pretty common. But yeah. Also, there is a way to do it where it's like, it's an inside joke, but it's also funny to others. Are theirs just purely inside joke?
Like this one. So this one, for example, I'm looking at one that says, and everybody knows that. Everybody knows that. I think that's kind of funny.
That's kind of funny.
Like,
that's funny.
I don't know what that means, no. But it's funny.
I think it means mostly that just everybody knows that. And that's funny in itself that everybody knows.
Right.
Right. So nothing more to be said there.
Or like, oh my God, time and place. What does that mean?
My eyesight sucks. I saw that one and your thumb was kind of overplaced. I thought it read like, oh my God, time and juice. And I was like, that I definitely don't know what that would be.
Just completely Gen Z, which I like. I'm a little bit envious of it.
Now, do you think that's indicative of their personality, that they're just a random person? Or do you think it's put on for social media, or is it too early to tell?
A little bit too early to tell, but I also think that this kind of speaks a little bit to what I was saying about their personality, how they're kind of a chameleon. Like, all of these pictures are with different people, lots of people, different settings, different situations, different activities.
Right.
They're kind of just all over the place. So they put themselves in a lot of different situations, I feel.
Right.
Based on their social media presence.
How far do you think it takes them into the game?
You know, I think people are going to start seeing through it. I think they'll be like middle of the pack.
Yeah. Teeny feels like early, if not first, merge boot. That is if they keep up this level of exuberance in that big group. They're on the red Lavo, I believe.
Yep.
Is it Lavo? Rome, God. Well, Rome has fallen. Let's just say Rome has fallen. Rome was lost in a day. It wasn't built in a day, but Rome was lost in an instant. And so the good thing for Teeny is that as long as Rome is around, and Lavo's, you know, done, looked like they've done pretty well in comps so far. As long as they keep winning and Rome is around, Teeny's lifespan gets extended in this game. Because I don't think that, even if they're a little bit annoying, and even if they're a little bit like too exuberant, I don't think they're going to like destroy their game before that tribe can get out Rome. Yeah. Even if Rome successfully plays an idol on, you know, themselves at first tribal, I still don't think Teeny would be the first one out.
Right.
But I think once you get Teeny in a big setting, if they're that level of exuberant, hey, maybe they tone it down.
Right.
But if not, then that's an early, that's just like too much, and people will target it.
Exactly.
There's also a celebrity comparison that we're going to do every segment here. So you said to me a few minutes ago, I have a great celebrity comparison. That's the way Julia talks. I have a great one. I love it. I hate it. So you have a great celebrity comparison for Teeny. Let's hear it.
No, you said you wanted to guess first.
Oh, I do have to guess.
I'll give you a hint. They're not a real person.
Jeff Bezos.
No.
No. Jeff Probst. Robot.
He is a robot.
Okay, can you also at least give me like era of the, I'm assuming it's like a TV or movie or whatever, era of when this media was published?
Our childhood.
Our childhood, so the 1950s. Oh, you know who it is? It's one of the two kids from Dragon Tales.
No.
Max, and what was the sister's name?
Oh, I don't know. All I remember is one of the dinosaurs' name, or dragons.
They're not, they're like dinosaurs, right?
They're dragons. That's the whole thing. It's called Dragon Tales.
It's not called Dinosaur Tales. Yeah. No, Cassie and Orb. And Orb. Orb was the big blue one.
Well, very, very close.
Okay.
You had the right idea with a cartoon from our childhood. TJ from Recess.
TJ from Recess, school's out. TJ was kind of a, he was kind of a troublemaker. Wasn't
troublemaker,
he? Yeah.
Kind of leader of the pack.
Kind of main character energy, because he was the main character. And Teeny certainly sees themselves, I believe, as the main character. A lot of these people out there do. I don't know how you get on Survivor being like, I'm just a little neat guy.
Right.
But I see that. I think I see TJ as a little bit more like rough and tough, as a little bit more of like a, you know, don't mess with me type. Whereas I see Teeny truly as more of a chameleon, like you said. So what was it for you that drew the TJ Teeny comparison?
I don't know. Just a vibe. Honestly, maybe it's just the like short hair and hat vibe.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's the first thing that came to mind.
Interesting. Okay. So I remember Recess, School's Out. I watched the movie and then the show came out afterward.
I think the show was first.
No, I think it was a Jimmy Neutron situation. I think the movie was first.
I think you're wrong.
All right. Well, why don't we look it up right now? Right. Why don't we look it up on the pod here? We got time.
Yeah, fact check.
Yeah, because I can just edit this in post.
Ha!
No way.
1997. I knew it.
So the TV show came out 1997. The movie 2001. I remember watching the TV show as a kid after school, like after the movie had come out, though. So,
well,
and it said the final episode date is 2001. So was there another? Was there? Oh, you know what it was? So Recess came out 1997. They make the movie. They end the series of Recess, and then Recess School's Out
is the name of the movie.
Then where's Recess TV show 2?
No, you were just watching reruns.
Oh my God.
I promise you. I think your mom probably lied to you.
No, she wasn't even there. No, I watched on a little, like, probably, I don't know, 20, 22 inch little white TV in the kitchen after coming home. The babysitter had made apple slices.
That's where it stems from.
What do you mean by it?
Just it,
yeah. Yeah, that's where it comes from. All right, so we got Teeny making it about mid-game. We got Teeny is TJ from Recess School's Out. Teeny is a chameleon. Teeny has lots of different situations. Ultimately, I think for as long as they're on the show, Teeny will be a memorable presence.
Yeah.
And won't fade into the background.
No.
But I do think that unless we see some sort of gameplay, which if you are truly a chameleon, you should be able to adapt. I guess the one vibe that I picked up from Teeny's intro video is they're very confident, which you should be. I'm not sure their confidence completely aligns with their self-awareness. I think they're a little bit more confident than they are self-aware of how they come off. But the edit that they got in the first episode, it seems like everybody likes them.
Yeah.
So we might just be haters.
We might be.
We are.
We definitely are.
Just in general, not of just Teeny. No offense to Teeny. I'm sure you're
listening to this, Teeny.
If you're listening to the first ever
episode. You're a lovely person.
Yeah, we love you. We love Teeny. We always have. We've always said it. But we're just generally haters of the nth degree, really. Yeah. So, Julia, thank you for doing your deep dive here. We're looking forward to episode 2, where you'll do a deep dive on somebody else. Now, we're not holding you to this. If you had to pick right now, who do you think you would pick for next week based only off the last episode? This is in all likelihood going to change.
Based only off of last episode, I think I would pick Sierra. There's always a nurse.
Yeah.
Every season of Survivor has a nurse. I saw her and I said, that girl's a nurse. I knew. For those of you listening, I am also a nurse, so I know what a nurse looks like. And she intrigues me. And so I want to do more research on her.
Well, thank you again. Let's do a kiss. Yeah, we're going to do that at the end of every segment.
Right, we do not.
It's going to be real gross. Real gross for everybody. Well, that's a wrap on the first ever episode of Flippers Always Win. Thank you so much to Emily, Jesse, and Julia for your analysis. And thank you to anybody who listened to this episode. We will be back next week for episode 2 with guests Mary and Greg, as well as Julia's next social media deep dive. I'm Flip. Have a great week. And this is where a tagline would go if I had one.